Dr. Kara Cute is a research psychologist who studies food insecurity in multiple educational settings with a particular focus on higher education. Dr. Cute co-led the Food Security and Higher Education subgroup of the Higher Education Division from 2021 to 2023. Dr. Virginia Gray's work focuses on development and evaluation of nutrition education strategies for people experiencing food insecurity. Dr. Gray co-led the Food Security and Higher Education subgroup of the Higher
Wrong head on the
Education
stat sheet, sorry.
Division
Isn't that
from
cute? It is.
2021 to 2023. Dr. Zubeda Kamar's work focuses on investigating food insecurity in higher education. Dr. Kamar is a past chair of the Higher Education Division of SNEB and currently co-leads the Higher Education Division's Food Security in Higher Education Subcommittee. So with that, I will turn it over to them to get us underway.
Great. We're so happy to have the time to share our toolkit with you today. And this is the work of the Food Security and Higher Education subgroup of the Higher Education Division. The toolkit developed out of a research project that our very active subgroup started in 2021, first collecting data amongst students at our respective institutions in 2022, which Kara is going to share with you today. And so the study data eventually led us to developing this toolkit in response as a practical resource for preparing students to address food insecurity. And we will just remind you all, it's in draft form. This is our first kind of soft rollout of it, and there's still room for some additions, which we'll be talking about today. So we are connecting with three of our SNEB nutrition educator competencies today. So you see these on the screen, focused on collaborating to improve access to healthy food, design of education materials, and also food security programs across our country. And the link to those is provided here. We don't have any conflicts of interest to disclose in our presentation, and we will be focusing on these three objectives in today's webinar. So first, we'd like to justify including food insecurity related content across the training for aspiring nutrition professionals. We'd like to give you some examples that you can use, and we're actually gonna have some time today to practice that, which is why we're in the in a meeting version versus a webinar. So we can put you all in breakouts and let you try out some of our activities later. And then lastly, we'd like you to leave with some ideas for implementing toolkit elements in a selected course or courses that you regularly teach. So we'll be covering our content today in three sections. So Kara is going to start off by showcasing our study findings. Zubeda and I are going to collaborate in showcasing our toolkit. And then lastly, we're going to, again, let you all have a chance to practice some of the activities and give us feedback. So I'm going to pass to Kara to get us started with the study findings.
Great. Thank you so much, Virginia. And I just wanted to say, as Virginia mentioned, that I got lucky to be able to present these data to you, but this is the work of our entire subcommittee and lots of folks worked on this together collectively. So as you all know, you're here, you're a part of SNEB. Food insecurity is a complex public health issue. And nutrition, public health, and social work students will be expected to be knowledgeable and able to work with clients and colleagues about food insecurity. And just as an example, nutrition students specifically have certain competencies that are expected of them. So they're expected to be able to determine barriers that might influence a client's nutritional status, collaborate with community members and other professionals to address food insecurity, to work with colleagues to develop and implement programs that address food insecurity. So given all of these different competencies from different professional groups and similar ones that are expected of public health and social work students, our group was really wondering, you know, are our students prepared? Are they able to meet these competencies? How are they being prepared? What are we doing to prepare them? And how can we improve that training? Next slide, please. So we decided to do a study together, and the research questions that we were focusing on were, what is nutrition? public health and social work students' understanding of food insecurity. We were also interested in what kinds of experiences these students have. And when we were talking about experiences, we were really thinking about them in kind of three different categories or three different buckets of experience. So lived experience of food insecurity, whether that's before coming to college or during college, classroom-based experiences that they have, and then sort of outside of the classroom or extracurricular experiences that they may have. We were really interested in getting student suggestions for how to improve their training around food insecurity, and how confident are students feeling, or do they report feeling, to address food insecurity as future professionals? Next slide, please. Great. So to do this, we conducted a cross-sectional online survey in spring of 2022. As Virginia mentioned, we used a convenience sample of undergraduates and graduate students majoring in health-related fields, and we conducted the study at 12 universities, which correspond to the universities where we all work and have access to the student bodies. Okay, next slide. So I don't want to get into too much about our measures and data analysis, but we did use a mix of fixed response and open-ended survey questions. We used a two-item hunger vital sign to measure food insecurity. Then we measured most of the experiences with fixed choice questions, but we also provided an option to write in other responses. And we did have a number of fully open-ended questions, including when we asked students to define food insecurity, when we asked them about what were their most impactful learning experiences, and when we asked for suggestions to improve training. In terms of analyses, today I'm really just presenting frequencies, although we did do some other tests that I will sort of mention but not fully present. For the open-ended questions, we coded responses using a thematic analysis. We developed a code book using an inductive approach. And then for actually coding the responses, each response was coded independently by two coders, and they met to resolve any differences. Okay, so super briefly, our demographics, we had just over 300 respondents to the survey, but the data that we're presenting here today is from a sample of we restricted it to 274 with complete responses. About half of our respondents were nutrition and dietetics students, which makes sense because that corresponds to the disciplinary makeup of our team. We had about a fifth from public health and a fifth from social work departments. Okay. Now, this is worth noting because most of the people who responded to this... Wait. All right. I can just say most of the students who responded were more advanced students. We had very few first year, second year, and third year students. Most of them were either fourth year or graduate students, which was actually great because that really meant that they had a chance to get exposed to food insecurity during their time in school. So we were pleased to see that we had sort of more advanced students. And then just two other demographic points on the next slide were that almost all of them are full-time students, and most of them were female. Almost 90% were female. Okay, so getting into our results, in terms of how these students were defining food insecurity, we found that the definitions really ranged a lot from simple, where they had just one or two themes that they mentioned, to more complex with four or even more themes. The most common themes that our coders identified in these responses were access, healthy and nutrient dense was a code that came up a lot. And that's, I think, important to many of us here at SNEB that the students were really focused on that health component of food insecurity, economic hardship, insufficient, worry, uncertainty was a code that came up, and then time. So these were the most common themes that our students were bringing up. And something that really struck our research team as being important and noteworthy was the focus on individual factors related to food insecurity. So 85% of the respondents defined food insecurity more from the individual level. So limited income, limited resources, and only 15% really had a broader view in terms of identifying community level factors, policy or community structures, food systems, geography, transportation. So that's something, and I don't want to give away the later part of the presentation, but we're going to be talking about how helping students to maybe expand their conceptualization of food insecurity and some activities that we can do that we have in the toolkit that I think we're going to get a preview of today in today's webinar. Okay, next slide. In terms of personal experience with food insecurity, about 1 in 5 reported having experienced food insecurity during their childhood before arriving at college. And then I would say still shockingly, but not surprisingly, that number pretty much doubles when students get into college. They report, many more report experiencing food insecurity, and that really kind of tracks with our best estimates of national food insecurity among college students. So, Thanks, Virginia. So we asked about whether students had taken any courses that included content about food insecurity, and we found just over 80% said yes. So they couldn't all remember what class it was in necessarily, but most of them said yes. There was some content about food insecurity in at least one of their classes. Okay, and we see on the next slide a similar number of students reporting that they had some kind of food insecurity experiences outside of their traditional coursework. So 77.2% said they'd done something kind of extracurricularly. And if we want to look at that a little bit more closely, we see that the most common types of extracurricular experiences that students report is service learning, doing an internship, or attending a lecture on campus. And then if you look down a little bit, you can see in that other section that actually the most common response was some kind of other volunteer work. So that really varied, but the most common experience that students report is doing something as in a volunteer capacity. Okay. And then diving in a little bit more with those classroom-based experiences, we asked about what kind of teaching methods were used, what students saw as the most impactful activities they engaged in the classroom, and their suggestions for the future, for training future professionals. So in terms of teaching methods, the most common were lecture and classroom discussion. And I think that's probably not surprising given how most higher ed classrooms are run and set up. Those were by far the most common approaches, but we also see case studies, video, community service as part of a class, and a simulation or game. So that's kind of just the landscape of how students are telling us that they're being introduced to food insecurity content in the classroom. Okay, next we asked students, what kind of classroom activities or assignments had the biggest impact on them? And this was asked as an open-ended, I should mention it was an open-ended question that we coded. And so we found that what the most frequent code was lectures and discussions. Now, looking at the prior slide that I just showed you, that's the way that most students are learning about food insecurity. So it kind of tracks that they're also saying, you know, that this was had an impact on them because some of them were only getting information in that format. But we also see that some homework assignments and kind of activities that students did were mentioned, video as impactful, videos, service and field experience was mentioned as being having a big impact, and then some kind of project-based assignment or activity. Those were the main, most frequent types of assignments that our respondents mentioned as having had an impact on them. Next slide. This, we asked about suggestions for improving food insecurity training. And so first I want to just say that almost all of the students that got to this question answered. very few, under around 7%, didn't answer. So they were really forthcoming with suggestions, which was great. And I also want to point out before I dive into what I have on the table, that there were, I think, a total of 14 different response categories. So there was a real diversity, and none of them had a super high percentage. So there was a diversity in terms of what the students are asking for, what their suggestions are. So the highest or the most common, most frequent type of activity that students requested was service experience or field experience. Then next we saw just a general increase in food insecurity. They wanted more topics. There was a request for information about food insecurity resources and programs that are based off campus. So specifically asking about more information about SNAP and WIC was very common in that category. Interestingly, they wanted skills training. So how to do an assessment, how to make referrals, how to work with clients. They wanted more training in that. Policy work. So things like writing, they mentioned writing letters to legislators, working with community groups on policy related activities, things like that. So again, this was really diverse and really helpful for us in thinking about pulling together the toolkit. You know, we were trying to really listen to what students were asking for as we pulled together the toolkit. On the next slide, so we also asked about confidence, and I'm not going to show too much about this, but we had 8 items. We used a 3-point scale and combined them into a confidence scale that had high internal consistency. Overall, the mean confidence was high. 3 was extremely confident, and the overall score was 2.17. So students generally reported feeling confident. The highest confidence was around being able to determine barriers that might influence a client's nutritional status. And the lowest level of confidence was the confidence that they could use a tool to assess food insecurity in individuals. So what we did with that confidence scale is we tried to understand what specific experiences students had that might be related to their confidence to address food insecurity as a future professional. We are working on a paper and still in the midst of doing these analyses, but I just want to give you the big takeaways from this, which I think is helpful to think about. Personal experience, lived experience of food insecurity is not related to confidence at all. Whether or not someone experienced food insecurity themselves, not related. However, taking any class, so students that took any class that covers food insecurity was related to increased confidence when compared with students who didn't have food insecurity covered in any of their classes. And similarly, doing any kind of extracurricular activity related to food insecurity was related to increased confidence. So those students that had some experience there had higher confidence than students who had no extracurricular experience. So that's sort of the overview of those results. And again, more specific things are forthcoming. On the next slide. So in conclusion, from the study that we did, we saw that students' understanding of food insecurity varies, but it is very focused on individual level factors, right? So there was a range of different topics that they brought up, but they were almost all focused on individual level. Most respondents reported being exposed to the topic of food insecurity during their time as students. And we saw, again, about 4 in 5 reported at least some exposure in the classroom and some exposure through extracurricular activities. The students identified a real diversity of experiences that had an impact on them, as well as many different ways to improve training. So there was just, you know, a broad range of responses that we saw there. And overall, students are confident in their ability to address food insecurity in the future, but taking any class that covered food insecurity and having any extracurricular experiences are both related to increased confidence. So as we, if we move on to the next slide, what we're hoping that you will take away from this, from the data piece of this presentation today, is that we hope that you'll feel encouraged to include the topic of food insecurity in your class, however it best fits with your classes, however it best fits with your teaching style. There was really no one right way to teach about it, to include it, to, you know, students were open, and any kind of exposure seems to help them. We hope that you will encourage students to engage in extracurricular food insecurity related experiences when they're available at your university, and even to think about creating food insecurity related extracurricular experiences when possible. And the good news is that we have this food security toolkit that Virginia and Zubeda are about to talk about, which we hope will be able to help you to do this. All right.
Thank you so much, Kara. That leads us right into the overview of the toolkit. So you should be able to access the draft through the chat. We've uploaded a PDF of this toolkit. And so before we have you interact with it a little bit, we just wanted to provide a little bit of the theoretical framework that we used for developing this toolkit. We settled on Merrill's theory, and as I explain the components of Merrill's theory, if you're not familiar with it, I think it'll be clear to you why we chose this theory. So at the center of Merrill's theory, there was a focus on a problem. And so in this theory, we engage students, or using this framework, we engage students in solving real world problems using a task orientation versus a topic orientation. So we saw that a lot of students learned about food insecurity through lectures and discussions, which could be great, but we really wanted to create some activities that people could use, instructors could use in their classes to really get students doing rather than just learning about. It also, there's an emphasis in this section on resisting the decontextualization of food insecurity. So we've integrated social determinants of health into many of our activities to help students develop a better understanding of how food security interacts with broader systems and environmental factors. In the activation principle, we are activating existing knowledge. So recognizing students bring in experience with food and food security, and then providing new experience that they're scaffolding onto that. In the demonstration section, we're giving examples through videos and simulations that show the many facets of food security. In the application section, we're providing opportunities to practice new skills and giving them feedback on that. And then lastly, in the integration, we're encouraging our learners to integrate with what they've learned into their everyday life and share it with others. And so any of you who are really familiar with the pedagogy of service learning may know that reflection is a really key part of that. So when we're giving students an opportunity to reflect on what they've learned and share it out, we're putting this principle into practice. We also would love to encourage all of those who are here today to think about ways that you could integrate food security into varieties of topic or classes that you teach. So not just waiting for that community nutrition or public health nutrition class, but looking for ways to integrate into introductory nutrition, which may already be there, but life cycle, and even in advanced nutrition or any course that you're teaching, there could be ways to integrate discussion of. Okay, so I'm going to pass to Zubeda, who's going to walk us through some of the components.
Great. Thank you, Virginia, and thank you, Kara, for providing that background knowledge before we talk about the toolkit. Thank you all for being here. What I'll do today is I'll give a brief overview of this toolkit, which is, of course, a very large document which you have access to. And please feel free to browse through it as I talk about some of these various activities. But as you can see on the slide, that it is divided into a few different sections. Virginia talked about the theory behind this toolkit, but otherwise, you know, we've provided lots of examples for you to incorporate some of these activities, these assignments, into your courses, and the courses are also very diverse, and you can think more about other types of courses where this can be implemented. So the first section kind of talks about lessons and activities for food security modules. The second section talks about service learning as an approach to food insecurity. Third section talks about identifying and supporting students experiencing food insecurity. And section four talks about the resources. And section five, which is basically an appendix, has some slides for you to use for your courses. So for section one, as you can see on the screen as well, we give you a lot of different activities here, you know, definitions of food insecurity activity. If your classroom has discussion prompts, either in person or online or on Canvas, or on other platforms, you are able to use some of those discussion points as well for your students. As Kara mentioned before, too, a lot of students understand individual level factors, but we hope that we can increase their understanding for systems level or more community level determinants as well. So I think the systems map assignment is going to be, and the causal loop diagram assignments are going to be very impactful to incorporate in your classrooms to give students that broader understanding of food insecurity determinants. Briefly, in a little bit, I will talk about the letter to legislator assignment and the service learning part, which I do think are very impactful activities that can be incorporated into your courses. So I will not mention much about that for now. And then there are further resources available for you, such as simulations related to hunger and food security. Then we have also provided suggested readings for you that you can incorporate for your classrooms, which are varied from reports to research articles, et cetera. Then there is a whole list of videos that are related to food insecurity. And again, that's not to say it's not an exhaustive list. We will keep updating it as you know more resources become available. Or if you have any resources, please feel free to share with us as well. But that list gives you some examples of some YouTube videos, some Amazon Prime videos, et cetera, that you can potentially use in your classrooms. And then, lastly, you know, ideas for community partners for more of a project-based learning, which I'll talk a little bit more in detail coming up as well. Next slide, please. Thank you, Virginia. And for section two, more service learning as an approach to food insecurity type of activities. And, you know, if you are following along on the toolkit, which has been shared in the chat, with you, so please follow along. We have provided some guidelines for service learning, and we'll talk a little bit more in detail about this, but there are lots of tools for you to use if you want to use a form for service learning, student matching, there's partner information, there are other discussion board prompts as well. So I'll talk briefly more about this in a little bit. Next slide, please. So for this section, you are actually going to receive an activity around this in a little bit towards the end of our talk today, but we wanted to provide some resources to help faculty members potentially, you know, identify some of their students that they might be working with that might be suffering from any of the basic needs insecurity. So in this section, you will see some examples of syllabi statements where you can incorporate potential wording to let your students know about available resources on your campus that support their food security needs. And then secondly, you know, as faculty members, we have various roles. We might be advising students, we might be mentoring them, and in various roles as we have for faculty members. It's important that we as faculty members are aware of the resources on our campus and potentially in the community too, so we can guide our students and our mentees better in this direction. Next slide, please. And in this section, there are some additional resources for you if you're interested, right, in kind of pursuing this direction. So food security focused study abroad programs, there are some universities across the country that have different programs, certificates, minors in this area. And if you're interested in learning more about them, we have provided a list for you. After that, you know, there are just overall resources for faculty and campuses, which, you know, includes reports and research articles that you can use to enhance your own understanding about food insecurity for students and just basic needs for students and how you can guide based on your context of your campus, because all of our campuses are different in the sense urban, you know, rural, residential campus, commuter campus, et cetera. So we've provided a variety of resources for you that you can use based on your own context on your campus. Next slide, please. Okay, so I am just going to talk about one of the assignments as an example. Maybe some of you have used this or some version of this in your classrooms. I personally use something of this nature in my community nutrition course that is for seniors on my campus. So just kind of the gist of this assignment is that we encourage students to look up policies or any legislations that are pending, for example, and we want them to, first of all, learn a little bit about them and kind of help them understand that, yes, they are becoming future professionals, but they're also citizens and they can support or oppose a potential bill. So kind of the background is for this assignment. And then there are many steps that students can take to make sure that they are coming up with an effective assignment for this. So we also provide a template with regards to how to write a letter to a legislator. So how do they search for this? You know, kind of look up a bill and determine who their representative is for if it's a House representative or if it's a Senate representative. Research the policy that they are going to support or oppose. Look up some evidence that exists around that, and then kind of talk about which position that they are taking to support or oppose this bill. Right. So I do think it's one of those impactful activities that allow the students to understand that, yes, we are becoming a professional in this field, but there is other work, policy work that we can support as citizens as well. Next slide, please. So this is, I think, another big section that we've provided lots of resources for: service learning as an approach to food security. Some of you may have incorporated this already in your courses, and others might be thinking about incorporating something of this nature. I do want to preface, before I talk a little bit more about these resources, that in my experience, I've noticed on my campus that this particular approach tends to be the most difficult, in my opinion, because there are, especially if you're working with external partners, there are a lot of forms and liability sort of issues that you may have to factor. But at the same time, that should not deter you, because service learning is one of the most impactful ways a student can learn and kind of apply their learning, and also learn from community partners and help them provide certain solutions as well. So with regards to this, in the toolkit, you will see that we have provided some example guidelines for service learning in community nutrition. So how can you engage your students in this sort of assignment? We have provided a form for service learning student matching, which essentially, if you are one of those instructors that have established relationships with other community organizations outside of your campus, you may be able to give students an opportunity to pick and select the best choice for them, right? Again, that's the form that talks briefly about that, and you are able to help students select for them and then allow them to work with that particular organization. Then the next form talks about service learning partner information sheet and interest form. This is for the community partner, and they fill it out with regards to what sort of expectations they have for the students, what sort of tasks that they may need assistance with, et cetera. And then, of course, we mention in the toolkit, too, that there is an understanding with regards to from the student side and the partner side that they are going to be working on this collaboratively, and the instructor is there as a resource, too. And then we also provide a form, just an example, right? Hours completion log. Different campuses have different requirements about what constitutes as a service learning activity, but 20 hours is what we have provided, and you know, typically tends to work for some of our campuses. So, you know, the students are encouraged to log those hours. The partners are encouraged to, you know, have that logging as well from their end. And then lastly, some discussion prompts that are there that allow the students to reflect on the experience. So the couple of discussion prompts that we have provided, one focuses on before they have started that service learning project. The other one focuses on after they have, or once they have started that service learning project. So we provide some examples in the discussion board in the first one where they haven't really started the project, you know, research the mission of the organization, what are some of the tasks and, you know, that they're hoping to conduct for this particular organization, et cetera. And then for the second one, we ask them if they have started some of the work, how is that going for them? And then if they've completed, you know, any reflections that they have or what they learned from this process. So lots of examples are there for you in the toolkit for you to utilize in your courses. Next slide, please. So I'll just briefly mention the appendix is, of course, there too, which provides some additional resources in the form of slides. But I will now hand it over to Virginia, who's going to conduct some practice activities with you all.
All right. Thanks so much, Subeda. All right. So now it's your turn to practice some of the activities that we've planned in the toolkit. So you in the chat have access to two links. One is the instructions that we're actually about to go over. So when you get into breakouts, you won't have lost those. And then the other is the toolkit itself. So we put screenshots, but this is very small print. So there are three activities. We're thinking you'll probably have time to get through two, but we didn't want anyone to be bored if you run out of, you know, if you get finished with the two. So you can take on that third one just if you have time. So I'll briefly explain them. We're going to put you in groups of around six people each. When you arrive in your room, of course, introduce yourself and your institution. We're not going to have each group come back and share what you found, but we will ask if there's, you know, something that really stood out in your group that you want to share. We'll give you an opportunity. So if when you get in your groups again, you'll introduce yourselves and you will designate maybe a group moderator, a group leader. We'll be staying, Subeda, Karen, I will be staying back in the main room. If any of you have questions and you want one of us to pop in, you're welcome to message us and we'll pop in. So the first activity is looking at the example of syllabus statements and the connecting students with food security resources on campus faculty roles. So we just want you to take a look at these resources and think about what you see done on your campus, what you might like to see done, and what support you need. And I'll just give you one quick example that's really stood out to me this week. So I'm currently serving as chair of my department, and I review the withdrawal requests that come through. And I've noticed quite a few withdrawal requests for students in our department relating to some sort of basic needs and security. And so this week I messaged the instructor of the course for the student whose case I received and said, you know, I noticed the students withdrawing and mentioning a housing or food insecurity need. Did you think to refer them over to basic needs? And you would think, and this was a nutrition instructor, that might have been second nature, but she wrote back to me and said, oh, I really didn't think about that. Thanks for suggesting it. And so that's just one thing we want you to talk about. You know, how do we create these dialogues so that more people are, it's not really that people don't want to take action. It's often, sometimes it just doesn't come to mind. So that's that activity we want you to dialogue about what you see going on your campuses and what you would like to do and what support you need. And then the second activity builds on the data that Kara shared about food insecurity definitions. This is a longer activity, but we've created an abbreviated version. So we want you and your groups to just take a minute or so to individually write down what your definition of food insecurity might be. And then after you do that, map it. So you'll have kind of privy knowledge to this. So your students, when you're using this activity with them, they wouldn't, but you'd map that onto the five. And I've seen others, I've seen four or six, but we here today we're presenting the five pillars of food security: quantity, quality, suitability, psychology, and social acceptability. So map your definitions onto that and see if you might think there are other pillars that should be added that aren't captured by these five. So just practice of an activity you can do with students. And then again, I imagine you probably won't get to activity three, but if you do, you're welcome to read it and use it. So we'll send you out to the breakout rooms. We're going to give you about 10 minutes in your breakout rooms, maybe 12, just to get situated and do those activities, and then we'll bring everybody back. So we hope you have a great discussion. And Paul, thank you for creating those breakouts.
All right, everybody is in their rooms.
Wonderful. Thank you.
So can we temporarily turn off the recording and then turn it back on?
Yes.
Back.
All right, welcome back. We were excited to see that no group just popped right back in, which means that we think you were probably deep into discussion. So thank you all for that. So we want to just provide an opportunity for a few of you to share out something that you discussed in your rooms. But are there a few of you that would like to share something that stood out to you? And you're welcome to unmute and say it, or if you want to drop something in the chat, you could do that as well.
So I guess I'm from the University of Pittsburgh, and we did have a fantastic conversation. I didn't want to leave our conversation. It was so good. Something, I think we probably all have this, but there are high rates of food insecurity at our universities. We all have the same. We are all working really hard to feed our students healthy food. Also, students are looking for nutrition education, cooking classes. So we're just seeing a lot of extra education, not just providing them with food, but also providing them with education and skills. And we all have experienced that and have seen that at our schools.
Thanks so much, Corey.
I think we see that at the different universities, there's a lot of different levels, you know, of what's going on. There's a lot of food pantries, but then maybe there's not something else going on. At the University of North Florida, where I work, we do have a lot of different things going on, and we are pretty conscious. They did let me last year add a cooking elective for freshmen and sophomores that I'm thrilled to be doing, because now 10 weeks a year or 10 weeks a semester, I know I'm cooking and sending food home. And so I have talked to the office that, you know, tracks the students that are maybe in need and have tried to get them to funnel them my way so that I, you know, I'm making sure I'm interacting with those students. But I see one of our problems is I run a grant program where we recover food from hospitals and feed it to low-income homebound senior citizens each week. And we do that 3 days a week. But when I have extra meals, I can't put it in our food pantry because the food pantry is their regulations require that all the ingredients, you know, are listed. And I can't tell you what the hospital meatloaf has in it. So I can't now offer those to our students. So I think sometimes we get leaps ahead and then we get like kind of stymied along the way. You know, we do our best, but you're always like, I think you've always got something that's your next hurdle, right? It's always like, what's your next thing, your challenge?
Great, thanks, Megan. Yeah, I appreciate both of you all sharing these cooking focused interventions because I think it's such a key skill that we could intervene with our college students, both to feed people and to teach them how to cook. Great. Anyone else have a thought you'd like to share?
A discussion in our group we had was with the syllabus statements, which are really awesome, you know, suggesting to share that widely with the university. And maybe that is what kind of is suggested too, but like other professors for other classes too. So it's an optional statement that they could put in and any standard syllabus maybe.
Great. Yeah, thanks, Alex. We included both of those pages because one of them is from my institution, Cal State Long Beach. And it's been you know, a norm to have it in the syllabus for a little while, but then we find that sometimes people put it there and then don't, you know, interact with it or talk about it as much. So that next page is to help us, you know, to create more of a norm on talking about it regularly throughout the class. Thanks for that comment. Is there one other comment? Well, we thank you all so much for being our pilot group with interacting and with our toolkit today. We would love any feedback that you have, that there's something that stands out to you as an idea that you want to share. Feel free to send it to us. This is a soft rollout of our toolkit, so we're still making some adjustments and we're looking to add some additional tools. So you might have noticed in our presentation today, we talked about the the call for that students indicated for learning about how to assess food insecurity at the individual level. And that's one of the pieces that we don't yet have in our toolkit. So please feel free to share. You're welcome to send any materials that you'd like to have us consider for adding to my email address, virginia.gray@csuob.edu. And we're still working on how this toolkit is going to be housed. And we want to make it as publicly accessible as possible. So you're welcome to share, you know, if you want to share our draft, that's fine. And then look for additional iterations as we move forward. And we certainly want to acknowledge, as Kara said, that this has been a team effort. This subgroup has been so active and so fun. A lot of us have become friends. And I think it's both today a testimony of what you can do with a professional organization as much as it is showcasing what, you know, the toolkit's about. So here you see the contributing members to the toolkit itself and some other acknowledgements. And we also want to give a big shout out to Matea Savoy-Ruscos at Utah State, who engaged her graphic designers at the institution. That's how it became so beautiful. Our Word document turned into this. So we're really, really thankful for the support in creating this beautiful document. So thank you so much for spending your time with us today.
Matea was one of my advisors.
Oh, great. Excellent. Yeah. She was great in providing pieces for this, being part of the research study, and then the graphics.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for spending your time with us today. And thanks to SNEB for hosting this webinar. And Paul, I'm going to pass it back over to you.
Thank you, Virginia. Thank you to you and our other speakers, and also to everyone else who attended today. My final wrap-up things are, again, please take the opportunity to complete that survey that will come up after we close out today's session. We do really appreciate your feedback. Be on the lookout for that follow-up email with today's recording, the handouts, and your CEU certificate. And with that, that concludes today's session. Thank you again for joining us, and have a great day.
Thank you.
Bye, everybody.